Do I need to push any buttons? We're already gone. Alrighty. Alright, well, we're on Bringing Learning to Life with Living Books. And I know a lot of you are already familiar with the term Living Books from Charlotte Mason's work. Can I just have a show of hands? Yes, I've heard Charlotte Mason. Okay, I love the Charlotte Mason Living Books approach, but I wanted to take a little bit different one because it is not overdone necessarily, but it's already pretty familiar to many people. Charlotte Mason advocated that you read to your children books that were living in the sense that they were, you hear a voice, an author's voice in the book, and not just an amalgam of anonymous textbook writers. You actually have a sense that there's a person behind that book. And I love that concept. And Charlotte Mason, we have a lot to thank her for making sure that we all develop good lists of wonderful living books to hand each other. But I want to move beyond book lists with this talk. What I want to interest you in is the idea of being interested, to go into the essence of a thing, is to be able to place your attention there. And when a child is interested in something, it's because the child himself has placed his attention somewhere. And that's what we're all hoping to get to happen when we hand him a living book. We're hoping to get his attention because we know that without his own attention, we are not going to be able to teach him anything. And so we're hoping to get past just the transfer of information and affect his whole person. What I think actually brings a book to life is the person holding it and, of course, the person listening to it. But since you're the ones here and I can't tell your children anything, I'm going to tell you that it takes you to bring a book to life. And a parent who takes a safe list of books and hands them to the child because they've been told that that list of books is a good bunch of books to hand the child is missing a big component of what we get in homeschool, which is to bring to life within our own unity with the child, within the space between us and the child, to bring to life a book, to place our interest in the book with the child side by side. And so it's that I hope to interest you in doing. So what brings the book to life? Passion is the first thing. A person in three parts. One part of you is your passion. And that doesn't mean that when you read a book about geometry, you have to be passionate about geometry. Or a book about history, that you have to just be passionate about King whoever it was. But what passion means to me in this context is that you are willing to be affected yourself. You are willing to place yourself in a position to be affected by the book you're reading with the child, or listening to if it's a book on tape, or if dad can stay awake long enough to read to you and the children. You're willing to place your interest in this material with the child and be affected. And this means that you're engaging your heart and not just your intellect. So when you model that for your child, it's one of the greatest things that you can do. The capacity to be interested, the capacity to place your attention into the essence of a thing and be interested, is one of the things that we're losing in the culture today and in the education in the schools today. And you may even have an interest deficiency if you've had a public school education. You may have to cultivate that in yourself, the capacity to place your interest. But as you do that with a child and model that for the child, you'll both grow. A living book, I would like to point out, is not a systematic rendering of a subject. In fact, it's very, very different from that. A real living book is usually a messy thing because it's bringing a real encounter that author had with something he was interested in. It's subjective in the sense that there's a real person behind the living book. We are very much affected by the Protestant culture around us, which has kind of flattened down our understanding of what the human person is. We tend to think that knowledge, stuff that we teach our children, stuff that you get out of books, stuff that you have to have in your brain before you go to college, we tend to think that that kind of thing is a big objective bunch of stuff that can be quantified and put in a place. In fact, if we use the schools model, we take that big block of stuff, divide it by 12, divide it by 9, divide that by 20, and today we input this portion of that objective block of knowledge into the poor kid on the factory wheel. So we need to get away from that objective sense of knowledge. When we want a living book, we want a subjective encounter with something that someone, that's real for someone, something that someone was passionate enough about to write a book. So it's going to be messy. We've got his bias there. We've got his limitations, the author's limitations. We have our the sense that he didn't go and give absolutely everything that you can give about this subject. He gave a window into that subject. This author gave a very experiential, maybe, understanding of a subject that there's a whole lot more to besides what this living book gives. So we're not looking for a systematic how to get everything there is to know about a subject kind of book. What I love about living books is that they are messy and that there's a lot of overlap, so that in one book you get these few parts of a subject, in another book you get those but with a little bit different flavor. And where they overlap, you start experiencing this layering in the child's mind about all that there is to know. And you end up with a child with a more in-depth. One of my children's teachers, he's now become an organist, and she listened to him play, and she said, he plays like someone who's well-read. And I had to go, what in the world do you mean by that? And she said, well, it's hard to explain, but there's an architecture of music, a spaciousness, and some people approach music and just play what's written there, but he's playing the whole of it. And the students that I've seen who can do that are students that are well-read, that have a lot of overlap, a lot of this messiness that we got, or he got, from living books. So we're not looking for systematizing or efficiency, the quickest way to get the subject into the child. We're looking for an experience we can share with the child because another person has actually encountered that and has passion about it. We're looking for presence, and that's the second component of the person who's going to make any book a living book, the presence of a person. Now, I do understand that there's times when you sit the kid with a book. Everybody does that, and this can be beautiful times for a child to have alone time with a book. But what really brings it to life is sharing it with someone else, and together placing your attention into the essence of whatever this book is trying to bring to life for you. So the presence of a person there is a huge part of what is going to make a book living for that child. Now, that person might want the child to read to her if she's busy cooking or diapering the baby or nursing and doesn't have enough hands. That person might be sharing books on tape as you drive. But the fact that there's another person there is very important. And the author is really, really present. When we read a book, the author has a name and that illustrator has a name. And any time that you can reinforce this idea, it's not just that someone wants credit for it or someone's so snotty that they don't want their book read without their name on it. It's that the author's name on a book tells the child there's a real person behind it, and your attention to that name helps the child begin to pay attention to the people who are writing his books and his favorite people and have that sense of relationship with those authors. My kids want to read lots of books by Arthur Catherall. The boys love Arthur Catherall, if you can find him in print anywhere. And because they recognize him and his style, they feel a relationship with him. If you can call attention to the illustrator, even the book designer, sometimes they've designed a special typeface for that book. All these things help the child be aware that there are other presences there when they read a book with you, that this didn't just come fully formed out of the internet somewhere, out of the ether, but this came through human beings. So I like to pay attention to the layout and the book and the size of it and the heft and whether I like the feel of it and what choices that they made about how to present the material, because all these people mediated this book to my child. And you end up helping the child understand that every good thing is mediated to him through imperfect people all around him. And then that's great fodder for theological discussions I can't have right now, but I bet you can imagine having them. Respect for authority starts with who is the author of a book, because the deconstruction, I'm sure you've heard of the deconstructionist mentality in colleges, people, the liberal modernist who want to deconstruct the authority of a book. They want to tell you that Shakespeare really meant this guy was gay when he wasn't, or that these women were chasing after that man not to find true love in marriage, but because they were lusting after him.